During the WBDG 56 marathon, we had a chance to talk with Mr. Kevin Calabro, a Ben Davis alumnus and also an alumnus of the WBDG program, about his career as an NBA play-by-play announcer. So here now is that interview, joined in progress.
Indianapolis, and actually did some public address stuff for Nancy Leonard hired me to do some public address stuff for the Indiana Pacers, and did the pre- and post-game show on WIBC Radio. Got a chance to follow Johnny DeCamp as the voice of the Purdue Boilermakers for a year, and then took a job with the Kansas City Kings, and that's how I got my start in the NBA when I was 25 years old. Left Indianapolis, moved to Kansas City, and did the Kansas City Kings. And so from there, I've done a variety of things. But, yeah, I did 21 years with the Seattle Supersonics, worked for ESPN Radio, and did their worldwide national broadcast, was the voice of the NBA on radio for several years, and did three NBA championships, worked for Westwood One Radio, and have done a number of NCAA tournaments. I did the Olympics in 2000 from Sydney, Australia, for Westwood One Radio. Worked for Turner Broadcasting, I've worked for ESPN Television, but my love has always been with doing local NBA games, and I'm currently in my sixth season now with the Portland Trailblazers, and still do some freelance work. Did the playoffs, three or four playoff games for NBA TV just this past spring. So it's been, I don't know where the time has gone, but from season to season, I've always been able to continue my love affair with basketball, particularly with professional basketball. It was all started there in Indianapolis.
Well, it's great that you got to kind of live out your dream doing all of that and even still working to this day. But Kevin, I do have a quick question for you. How did you get into the professional? Like, I know you obviously started your work early on in your career, but how did you get into that? How did you, like, reach out to people?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And again, I credit Dana Webb and Bill Wakefield, by the two instructors there. I was a pretty shy kid, and I think they quickly recognized that I had some ability, but I needed someone to just kind of push me along a little bit. My mom was actually a real go-getter. My dad was a hard worker as well, but dad was an administrator and a principal there at a couple of great schools there on the west side, Chapel Glen and Chapel Wood. My mom was there as well. But my mom actually, Dana Webb had worked for a number of commercial radio stations in Indianapolis, and one was a daytimer, a 1,000-watt daytimer, WATI 810 on the AM. It's now defunct. It's no longer a broadcast entity. But they had a weekend opening on Sunday mornings for somebody to come and play tape, religious tape, the paid religious announcements and so forth on Sunday. And so I just thought that would be the greatest thing, to go in there and make, I think it was $1.25 an hour or something like that. This goes back to 1971. But I needed a ride to go to the interview because I didn't have a license at that time. I think I was 15, 16 years old. So my mom drove me down to WATI over there on Hannah Avenue. It was on the south side of town. And went in for an interview. And I think they had pity on me, and they hired me to come in and do Sunday morning tape. So my job was to come in on Sunday mornings and basically just play reel-to-reel tapes beginning at 6 o'clock in the morning until noon. And I would be able to, at the top of every hour, to open up the microphone, give the time and the temperature and the forecast, which at that time was just, that was over the top for me. I'm getting paid to be an announcer. And because I had an FCC third-grade license, that allowed me to actually sign on the transmitter on Sunday morning when I went in there. Every morning I would sign on because it was a daytime station. So a lot of responsibility for a kid of 15 and a half, 16 years old. But that's long story short, that's how I got my start. And I think that would be the message I would send to any youngster out there that wants to get started in the business, is take any job that's available in the industry. I mean, there's so many jobs now available because of the internet and so forth, that you can almost create your own job in these days. But I think is just the bottom line, is start small, start slow, and build, and pretty soon you'll find yourself in a position.
position where you've got a lot of skills that you can take to the marketplace and make them marketable.
So you've obviously had a long NBA career. What moment sticks out the most to you?
Well, it would be doing the, you know, the three finals for ESPN Radio. Those 3 years leading up to 2016 where I took the job with the Portland Trailblazers. You know, there's nothing quite like working alongside Hubie Brown or the late, great Dr. Jack Ramsey to really to focus the mind and get the, your best work out there on the radio. I mean, that was an invaluable experience that I had working with those two, you know, Hall of Fame coaches. I just learned so much being alongside two gentlemen like that. But also going to the finals with the Seattle Supersonics, being the voice of the Sonics 96. Sonics that year won 64 games, but unfortunately met the winningest team then in professional basketball, the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan, who was 172, and we lost in six games in the finals in 1996. So those would probably be the highlights, is getting to the pinnacle, getting to the top, being able to observe those games and do those broadcasts on radio as they did at that time. Those certainly stand out.
So, obviously, you've had an absolutely loaded career. I mean, there's many people wish they could get to any part of stature that you've done. But obviously, you've been doing it for a long time. Obviously, you graduated from Ben Davis in 1974. How much longer do you think you're going to be calling games? And then when do you think it's going to be time to call it quits? Or do you just plan on doing it until you can't do it anymore?
Well, you know, a friend of mine just celebrated 50 years as the voice of the Phoenix Suns, Al McCoy. And Al, I don't even ask what Al's age is anymore because he just runs circles around everybody. Al's got to be close to 80 years old, 81, 82 years old. As I said, I worked alongside Hubie Brown, and Hubie's pushing mid-80s. Dr. Jack finally had to quit the broadcasting at the age of 81, only because he had brain cancer. I mean, I look at those guys and I think, these are true Ironmen that just have a great, great affinity and love and passion for the sport, for the industry, as I do. I might not, you know, go to that age. I'm 65 now and feel like I've still got a lot of juice left. So, you know, I think I'd like to take this out to the age of 70 and see where that leaves me. Of course, you know, your family comes into the equation as well. The family has to make a lot in this industry for one to be as successful as a lot of us have been. And it means, you know, you're going to need a spouse that understands and children that understand when you're away all those days on the road, you're covering these events and so forth. And I think that's also has to be part of your calculation. But, you know, to go back on something you just said about, you know, you'd be lucky and grateful just to achieve any of that aspect of my portfolio or my experience, that's always been my thinking anytime I do an event. It's, if this is the last event you do, just really cherish this opportunity, because I recall, you know, when I was that age at Ben Davis, thinking, if I could just do one or two of these games, I'd just feel like my career would be complete if I could just do one or two of those events. And I always feel that way when I approach these events that I do. It's like, and, you know, let's treat this with the respect that it's due, with the aspect that, you know, there was a time when you would have given anything to do this event, to just do one game. So I think that's what makes it so special when I do these games.
Yeah, Kevin. Also, one thing that we do know in your Twitter bio, you have voice of the Ben Davis Giants from 72 to 74. So basically giving us a shout out, you could say. Just talk about why that is your Twitter bio.
Well, you know, I can understand people with their Twitter bio. They like to lay it all out there in their resume and so forth. And I just have never been that one to do that. And I just thought, you know, I'm just gonna reduce it to that period of time when I actually got my start, when it was very, very special to do these games and just let that be. Let that stand for itself. And have people wonder about that a little bit. And it's, you know, it's not the most sophisticated, I know, but let's face it, Twitter isn't the most sophisticated either. So I just leave it at that.
So Kevin, you obviously mentioned earlier family life and broadcasting, seeing how far you could go in your career with age-wise. How was that when you were first kind of in your earlier days of broadcasting to even your 40s and everything like that? How was family life moving from city to city with every new job that came up?
Yeah, we were fortunate in that as soon as my wife and I were married, we were living up on College Avenue, and I got the job with the Kansas City Kings. So we moved to Kansas City. We moved back to Indianapolis and had our first son. Then we moved back to Kansas City and had our second son and then moved to the West Coast. So our movement was done when our family was very young, when my wife and I were fairly young. I was 30, I think, at the time when we made the move to the West Coast. And we just decided we would stay to the West Coast. There were some other opportunities in the Midwest, but we were really intrigued by living in Seattle and living in the Northwest, and we just absolutely loved it up there. We just decided we wanted to make that a longer stay with the intention of maybe moving back to the Midwest. But as it turned out, we had two more kids, and you know, they were in school and they had friends and they were in the community. And I just made a point at that mark that I wanted them to have as stable a family life as we possibly could. And for that reason, we didn't move to Oklahoma City when the Sonics moved in 2008 to Oklahoma City. We did not move with them. That ended my relationship with the team after 21 years, and I went into freelance work just so I could work and live out of Seattle, and my kids and my wife didn't have to relocate. So it's definitely something you have to do, you find yourself doing, I think, if you want to succeed in the business. Although, you know, there have been plenty of other people that have been able to stay in town, stay in Indianapolis. I know my brother's had a great career there in Indianapolis in the radio and TV industry. He made, to my knowledge, he made the one move. That was to Fort Wayne and then to Dayton and then to Indianapolis, where he's been for, gosh, better part now, I think, of 35, 40 years. So it is possible to stay in that market. I just found that for what I wanted to do, the opportunities laid outside the market, because at that time I was very young, trying to get my start in play-by-play. And, of course, in Indianapolis there were any number of really fine, experienced veteran announcers, and they weren't going to go anywhere. So, that's the point where you pick up your suitcase and you have to leave town and look for other vistas.
Hey, Kevin, this is Dennis Goins, and I teach television here at the Ben Davis High School.
Yeah, Dennis, how are you?
Doing great, and I had the pleasure of meeting you when we were in Sydney, Australia for the Summer Olympics, and Dave and I were working at THR. And I just wanted to, first of all, thank you for all your support over these years and how important it is for these young people to understand that you were right here in their the same position, and yet you're doing so well and have done so well, and the consistency and your family with your father and your mother, and, of course, your other brother. Dave always talked about him because he was an educator also. But Dave and you have been able to be successful in the broadcasting. Can you just talk about that, just that, you know, whatever 30, 40 days we spent in Sydney covering those Summer Olympics? I know most people know you because of the NBA experience, but just talk about that experience in itself. That's covering the biggest sporting event that you could possibly cover.
Yeah, I got lucky, Dennis. Thanks for asking. About 2 months before the Olympics, in 2000, I got a call. I said, you know, we have a need for someone to go over and do play-by-play on radio, Westwood One Radio, on the national network, on the international network, to the Olympics. And it goes hand-in-hand with what I was talking about with the family. And we had family responsibilities. We had family vacations lined up. And of course, I brought it to everybody. I said, you know, this would be a great and exciting adventure. I look back on it now. I wish, you know, I'd taken my family over there to Sydney, but you know, I just really didn't know what was involved, and so without one dissenting vote, the family agreed, yeah, you know, go do this, it would be a lot of fun. So off I went. It was a great send-off. I remember Muhammad Ali came into Seattle on an Olympic fundraising effort that he was on throughout the country, and they had a gathering of Olympic medalists from around the Great Northwest there at this banquet, and I was was the MC at the back with Muhammad Ali and the Phil Mayer, the Mayer brothers, you know, famous skiers, Debbie Armstrong, famous skier, and a medalist in Olympics in the past, and you know, several others that were in attendance there. And that was kind of our send-off to Sydney. So I think the momentous nature of the Olympics really set in on me. You know, what was it? And then my analyst for the games was Billy Packer, who I'm sure you remember quite well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how opinionated Billy was. Billy was not a fan of the NBA game. And, of course, all of the players on that Olympic team were NBA players, including a guy who was playing for the Supersonics, had played for the Sonics at that time, Ray Allen. And it was an incredible experience just to be around guys like Vince Carter and Kevin Garnett, you know, that type of talent. It was different in that we weren't allowed the kind of access that we were accustomed to when covering the NBA players on a day-to-day basis. I mean, they were secluded for a great deal, so our interaction with them was minimal. But we did, I think we did 10 games leading up to the gold medal game. And there were a couple of hiccups. Lithuania nearly beat them twice.
Yes.
Lithuania was coached by Donnie Nelson, who was he was one of the coaches. He was then later the general manager of the Dallas Mavericks and did an incredible job there for close to 24 years. So Donnie was in a consultancy role, and he seemed to have, you know, the key to how to beat these U.S. players. And he was to use their inexperience with one another against them, and that is they didn't have a lot of experience playing together. They played against one another, but not together. And the camps were very, very short. But, you know, talent usually wins out. So that was definitely the case with the United States in 2000 when they won the gold medal. But it was a tremendous experience. The final game was against France, and it was a close game. France played them two incredibly tough games, including the gold medal game. And that you probably remember the Vince Carter dunk on Frederick Weiss. That was, I think, the biggest highlight of that game was the incredible Vince Carter dunk.
He's still talking. That
goes back a long way, and it was a wonderful experience. Just to be there, and then be able to go to any one of the other venues with the media pass you had was also, a bonus, because I would go to, next door was the baseball facility. I'd go over and watch the U.S. baseball team and play South Korea. And at that time, Cuba had a team, and they had some great talent that was coming into the major leagues. And then you'd go down to Bondi Beach and watch beach volleyball, and you could go see team handball, something I'd never even seen before.
Man, you're bringing back memories now.
The track and field events were incredible as well. And, of course, they were all located there on the grounds where the basketball was being played, so you could just walk right across the venue, and you were there. It was a great experience. I'd love to do that again.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time out to expand on your experience and, more importantly, these young people's knowledge and the importance of working hard and remembering where you come from. And we appreciate the Calabro family. I won't keep any more of your time. I've got to go do hall duty, Kevin. So always a pleasure, man. Keep up the good work, and I'll tell Dave I got a chance to talk to you.
Please do. Dennis, thanks so much. Thanks for your work and the students' great work as well.
God bless you. All right, bye-bye.
So, Kevin, as the voice of a team, how important is it to have a relationship with the players?
Well, it's very important, and you know, I'll be honest with you, it becomes more difficult the older you get and the younger the players get. You know, trying to relate to 19, 20-year-old players who have spent maybe a year or two at tops in some, you know, college setting somewhere, and in particular, it's maybe a little easier these days in terms of interviews and so forth, because players at this level now, because of AAU, because they've been identified as quote-unquote star players, special players since maybe
seventh or eighth grade, they're used to doing interviews, and a lot of them are very polished to doing the interviews and so forth. So that's never an issue at all. It's just the day to day where you go to a practice, you attend a workout, something of that nature. Just chatter, just making conversation. I think is important, just to get to know the players, get to know his family a little bit. A lot of times, I know we have a fellow by the name of Trendon Watford, his brother Christian Watford played for Indiana University. This goes back, I think, 12 years ago or so, played for IU. And, Trendon's parents, he went to LSU. But Trendon, when he was a kid, growing up in Birmingham, Alabama, would drive up with his parents to Bloomington to see his older brother's basketball games. And, that's just a great story. And so we were in Memphis this year when his parents came up from Birmingham to see Trendon play, and we got a chance to meet his parents. They're just the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. And so those kinds of stories are good when you're relating the type of person that the fans are seeing out on the floor in a Trendon Watford, our young player now these days with the Portland Trailblazers, because you can say, hey, you met mom and dad, great people. Let me tell you their story, driving up from Birmingham, Alabama to see all their kids' games. These are just quality people, and it's great to see Trendon Watford, who was an undrafted player coming out of LSU, who was a two-way player, which means he was a non-contract guy, was limited to 20 games this year, yet because of COVID, get an expanded role and play in close to 60 games this year and play so well that they eventually gave him a contract. So those are great stories that you can relate to the fans that I think they enjoy.
Well, all right then. Thanks for all the insight, Kevin. It's really been nice having you on. Obviously, Mr. Golan's enjoyed it as well, and we all did as well. So thanks for joining us on the WBDG 56 Marathon, and I hope to hear from you again at WBDG maybe 57th Marathon.
Absolutely. Anything you need, let me know.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
All right. Goodbye. So there we go.